into something it was never intended to be, sort of a frat house. Obama has thrown a party at the White House to honor blues music. Now, I like blues music, but frankly, to me, it sounded like a frat house party rather than a war leader who's supposed to defend us at a time like this, especially when you have $6 gas and terrorists encircling us around the world. But let's go back to the Santorum Satan Savage article. I said yesterday on the show, Santorum is right about Satan. Someone who actually believes what he's talking about can win the White House. And WorldNet Daily wrote it up. Matt Drudge posted it. It's gotten enormous play around the world. And the fact of the matter is, I said, I think Santorum is right. And I think that anyone who attacks him is not seeing this for what it is, Savage told his radio audience. Savage said he agrees that America is primarily a Christian nation, and his churches and synagogues are, quote, filled with parishioners who are screaming for preachers and pastors and rabbis to speak the truth, and they're not getting it. Addressing students at Ave Maria University in Florida in 08, Rick Santorum declared, Satan has his sights on the United States of America. Santorum said the devil is attacking the great institutions of America, using those great vices of pride, vanity, and sensuality as the root to attack all of the strong plants that are so deeply rooted in the American tradition. Savage said Santorum's speech speaks to the core issue in America right now, which is the culture rot, the soul rot. The former senator said America is in a spiritual war. Savage said people in many churches and synagogues are getting only mumbo jumbo. They don't get the true stuff that they're going to the churches for, Savage said. He noted that the comments have caused concern among Republicans who believe they could cause serious damage in the general election if Santorum were to become the nominee. But Savage thinks they could ultimately benefit Santorum because he is expressing what most Americans believe. I don't care that the liberals are having a heyday with it, he said. I think it's going to work against them. Savage reminded his listeners that Democrats rejoiced when Ronald Reagan, a cultural conservative, became the GOP's nominee to run against Jimmy Carter in 1980. Savage taught his audience that when Jimmy Carter ran America off the ground, the worst president in American history until now, along came Ronald Reagan, and the left was high-fiving each other all over the DNC. Savage said Democrats were rejoicing. They said, thank God the stupid Republicans have picked a right-winger to run against Carter. And they started to mock Reagan. The rest is history. So you never know what can happen when you get someone who actually believes what he's talking about, as Rick Santorum does, Savage said. Savage Nation airs live Monday through Friday across America on 310 stations. So let me ask you this. Do you have no respect for Santorum? Do you have less respect for Santorum? Do you believe Satan is a metaphor? Do you think he meant it figuratively or literally? There's another big story. A very, very, very big story. A Muslim, two of them actually, were on a plane going from Portland to Texas. And they caused a ruckus on the airplane. When they were not seated next to each other, they started to verbally attack the stewardess, according to Associated Press reports, and started screaming, Allah Akbar. And then one of them tried to light an electronic cigarette. Well, there was no FBI. There was no Homeland Security. There were no air marshals, but there were Texans. Real, honest, beefy men. They jumped up and subdued the Middle Easterners. However, my friends, here's the story that you really have to understand. It's the story within the story. I'm going to play for you the news version of this. It's 30 seconds long from one of the gelded reporters that works for a news outlet in Texas. I want you to listen to the gelded report first on this incident. Listen.
Continental Flight 1118 took off from Portland tonight, headed to Houston, had to be turned around about 20 minutes into the flight when the pilot decided to turn around and land back in Portland, all because of a belligerent passenger. Now, two Middle Eastern men wanted to sit next to each other on the flight, and when it didn't work out, one of them became very upset, started screaming. He then lit an electric cigarette. Flight attendants were clearly worried. They asked passengers for help, and when the plane landed, the police came on board, took the suspect off in handcuffs, and escorted his friend off the plane.
Now, notice this gelded reporter, being a good little boy who got his job in the news station because he says, belligerent passenger, not Muslim. Then he says, two Middle Eastern men, not Muslim. Then he says, one started yelling. He didn't say Allah Akbar. But I want you to hear what one of the passengers, or several of them, had to say, as opposed to the gelded, useless reporter. Listen to the next one.
He was screaming, "Allah is great, Allah is great," you know, and it kind of worries you when all of that happens. But believe me, there were enough men to hold him down.
Absolutely. Every guy that was in my area was ready to go. I mean, it was not even a thought. You could tell the buckles were off. People were already leaning towards the aisles.
It almost made me cry to see the way everybody responded, because the gentleman that could help got up and helped the stewardess. She was just a little bitty thing.
She ran back, and she got the plastic handcuffs and ankle cuffs.
You know, it's just happened what should have happened. Everybody got up and did a part that needed to do it.
Not a word from the FBI, not a word from Homeland Security.
We were coming back from the alley. We got a report that a bunch of white racists jumped on a couple of Muslim gentlemen, and we're going to have the girls at DHS and FBI get to the bottom of this. We're working on possibly having all the passengers arrested. That's the report coming out of DHS. You know, we'll be going down to the lanes again tonight where we'll discuss what to do with them passengers.
Not a word from Homeland Security, not a word from the FBI, not a word from the brave men and women at the TSA. It took Texans. Now, what's interesting to me is that this could have been a dry run to see if there was a soft flight that they could do all over again what they did in New York. After all, Portland, as you well know, is one of the heartlands of extreme left-wing stupidity and left-wing fanaticism, left-wing weakness. So if you were a terrorists doing a dry run, wouldn't you try a plane out of Portland? What these Middle Easterners didn't know was that the plane from Portland was going to the heart of America, into Houston, Texas, where apparently the men act a little different than the gelded men of Portland, Oregon. So they screamed, "Allah Akbar," try to light an electronic cigarette, did they? And that's not considered a threat to national security. That's not considered anything but a slight belligerence on the part of the passengers. 1-800-449-8255. At the bottom of this hour, I'd like to say we have a special guest, but I don't want to make it into something cheerful, because it isn't. Do you remember what happened on August 6, 2011, when our commander-in-chief sent 29 SEALs and others into a CH-47 Chinook chopper in the black of night, and sent them off on a mission from which they would never return? Do you realize that more SEALs were lost because of that one mistake by the commander-in-chief than in the entire history of the SEAL unit? And yet there's been no press on this, no reporters, nothing, not a congressional investigation. Who made this decision to kill all these SEALs? Why were they all put in an old, slow-flying Chinook helicopter in the black of night instead of onto three fast attack helicopters? Who made that decision? We don't know. But I do know this. The parents of one of these elite warriors, the parents of the deceased Aaron Carson Vaughn, will be with us. Billy and Karen Vaughn, Aaron's parents, are going to talk with us about this nightmare. And maybe we will find one politician in America willing to get to the bottom of who is it in the Defense Department, who is it in the Obama administration who put all these men on an old, slow helicopter. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I mean, of course, there's another silly debate tonight with, again, the Satanists from CNN controlling the dialogue. And you know that the Satanists at CNN will not discuss good or evil, right or wrong, security or insecurity. So for the Republicans to be committing slow suicide by debate is something I can't watch anymore. And that's why, I mean, WND and the Drudge Report posted Michael Savage's remarks, saying Rick Santorum is right about Satan and his remarks about Satan. That's a big story. Also, do you believe that the disturbance on board the Continental jet from Portland to Texas, in which a Muslim passenger shouted Allah Akbar and had to be constrained, was anything less than a terrorist dry run? You know, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. One note, please. I have a very dear friend who is convalescing from serious surgery, Dr. Richard Cunyon in San Francisco. If you're listening, I wish you the best. You've given so much to so many people through your writings and your doctoring. I hope that all of the patients of Dr. Cunyon will send him send him your best wishes. He's a wonderful person, a fine doctor, 30 years ahead of his time, a wonderful medical doctor who knew more about nutrition than, well, anybody in his time, and he's still ahead of the curve. Richard, we wish you the best. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's start the ball rolling tonight in New York City on WOR. John, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was, as a believer, it wouldn't be a metaphor that Rick Santorum, if he is a believer, I don't know anything about Rick Santorum, whether what they say, but if he's truly a believer, Satan is a spiritual, is the devil, and that's spiritual, and that's real, and it attacks all things.
Well, but you've got to understand that even when the biblical writers wrote about Satan, they were also referring to forces of darkness, forces of evil. I don't think they really meant somebody with a tail and a pitchfork, do you?
Well, no. That's what Satan wants. He wants you to think it's some sort of like cute little thing to mythify it. If you mythify it,
Satan is Hollywood. The Satanists in Hollywood. You know, how much further does it have to go that every movie shows a girl behaving in a manner that you wouldn't want your daughter to behave? Tells you that your son should marry another man.
Well, clearly.
Debases the military, debases police, turns criminals into heroes. I mean, is that not Satanism? What is that?
No, that is. But I'm talking, it's a spiritual power. It's a spiritual power. That it's a fallen angel that has gotten.
Look, we all have good and evil in us, though. You got to remember, we're all not, you know, pure running around pure angels here. You have evil in you. I have evil in me. Is that right?
We all have a sin nature. We all.
That's right, and we all have to fight against the evil impulse every day of the week.
Yes, every.
And
day.
Some days it's stronger than others. Some moments it's stronger than others. Yes. Sometimes people can't cope with their impulses. And so they act on them, and then they feel guilty, as they should. So then what do the Satanists in the therapeutic industry do? They tell you there should be no guilt. There should be no shame. Well, I would argue that we need guilt and shame in order to survive as a human being.
You need Jesus.
I see there's a diverse audience here. You may need Jesus. God bless Jesus. Jesus is a wonderful prophet, was a wonderful prophet. However, there are people who don't believe in Jesus. There are Jews. There are Buddhists. There are Hindus, there are Muslims, and there are agnostics who believe in good and evil. There are atheists who believe in good and evil. There are atheists who are better people than some of the most believing religious people I've met on the planet. I've seen very bad religious people and their behavior. What, because they wear a certain outfit and speak in a certain tongue, and they do the mumbo jumbo, it makes them good? No, I don't think so. You want me to go into the welfare fraud amongst certain religious people? You want me to go about the triple dipping amongst those who do the mumbo jumbo jive and they do everything correctly and they rip off the government with Medicare fraud, Medicaid fraud, welfare fraud? I don't want to go into it, okay? We know what's going on in this country. So what's good, what's evil? Now that's the next question. It's not for every man to decide. Today, I know someone who was riding a bicycle in Florida and he went past a restaurant before his radio show. And there was a hullabaloo in a crowd around somebody on the ground. And there was a whole crowd. And there was a big man laying over someone on the ground. And the man on the bicycle looked at it and didn't know what it was. And the crowd was milling about. And he said to another man standing and milling about, "Did someone get hurt? Did someone have a heart attack?" And the man next to him said to the man on the bicycle, "No, it's a little child having an epileptic attack." And the man on the bicycle pushed his bicycle closer. And he saw a little 4-year-old blonde doll laying there in a convulsion, with her big father over her, sheltering her. And there were 3 other little children being held by the grandmother in tears and crying. And the man on the bicycle was moved himself, not knowing what to do, feeling helpless as they all waited for the ambulance. The man did not know what to do. Well, the ambulance came, and the big father picked up the little broken doll of a girl. The other children were broken down in tears, and the grandmother was sitting with them dumbfounded at the table. And the ambulance driver would not take the grandmother and the siblings in the ambulance. "No, they're not coming," they said to the man in the bicycle. So the man in the bicycle said to the grandmother, let me get you a taxi. She said, it's okay. He said to her, do you have money? She said, yes, I do. She was Irish, very strongly so. The man on the bicycle was moved to tears in his own mind. He didn't know what to do. He put $20 down on the table in the little boy's hand, and he said, buy your grandmother a drink tonight. And he pedaled off into the distance. So there's many things going on in the world. What's good and what's evil? I'll let you figure it out.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We all love our warriors. We all love our heroes. We all know that they're the only thing that stands between us and a thousand years of darkness. And last year, August 6, 2011, more SEALs died in one incident than in the entire history of the SEAL unit. 29 rough, fearless warriors were put aboard a CH-47 Chinook helicopter in the black of night and sent off onto a mission from which they never returned. Joining us right now to talk about one of these SEALs are the parents of Special Ops Chief SEAL Aaron Carson Vaughn. Billy Vaughn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. It's a privilege to be here.
First of all, Mr. Vaughn, all we can say is God bless you, and we send our condolences. I'm glad to see America can still produce heroes, but from my point of view, as simply as a talk show host, something is wrong with this picture. Why were so many SEALs put into a single old helicopter?
Well, I can tell you why they were put in the old helicopter. I can tell you why they were put in the CH-47. What we have been told is we don't have enough MH-47Gs for special ops to perform their missions. Right now, so I think, and this is my opinion based on information. So it's based on something at least. The special ops missions have been, and they've told us that they're ramped up. They've ramped them up so much because the conventional operation is winding down, and to make it look like to the American public that the war is winding down, that they just simply don't have enough special ops choppers, and they're flying with what they have. And that night they were using a CH-47, and so.
Well, let me ask you this: the MH-47 is a newer, faster machine.
I tell you what, sir. I can't tell you what the difference is between the MH-47G and the CH-47. I don't know anything about choppers, but I don't
want to put you on the spot. The question to me, as a civilian whose heart was broken, even though it wasn't my son, thank God, and it was your son who you lost, one of America's best and brightest, and many others, they were all put into one helicopter. Why not three Chinook helicopters, for example?
What I can say about that is they wanted maximum power on the ground immediately, and I'm not going to say any more about that.
You don't want to impugn the military. I understand that. I mean, I get that.
Well, I mean, the military has explained. I'll just tell you the truth. As far as what Karen and I know, the military has answered our questions satisfactorily, as far as we know. But the people in Washington have not. On the fact that the rules of engagement, they weren't even able to fire the AH-64 Apache in the sky when he saw the RPGs fired, was not able to return fire because of the rules of engagement set by this president, and at least that's what we're told. And then they are not.
So you mean as the RPG was on the way toward the helicopter, the supporting helicopter, the Apache couldn't fire at the terrorist?
What we were told, this is what we were told on more than one occasion, because I asked and some other people asked the question several times, as the CH-47, as the Extortion 17 came into land, two Apaches were overhead watching everything that was going on. And we actually saw the videotape of the last minute and a half or so. We did not see the RPGs fire, but we could hear the audio from the Apache, and the Apache's one of the pilots said, "Oh, so and so, there's an explosion. Oh, so and so, there's another one. Extortion 17 is down." That pilot saw the RPGs fired, we are told, and he was not able to fire on the men who fired the RPGs, because the rules of engagement stated that there could be friendlies in the same building as to where the fires came from. So he did not return fire.
Meanwhile, your son, Special Ops Chief Aaron Carson Vaughn, one of only 300 of America's most elite warriors, and 29 other rough, fearless American warriors are gone. There's never been no congressional investigation. So far as I know, it was covered up or dismissed immediately. Instead, we hear about a singer, a junkie singer, who died after trying to commit suicide. I mean, it's sickening. To me, it's sickening that the junkies and the degenerates are given funerals and support and parades. And guys like this. Well, I should stop, because it gets me crazy. And the fact of the matter is, you and your wife are making yourselves available to speak publicly across America, you say, in an effort to carry the torch that your son Aaron passed to them. What is it that you tell students, Mr. Vaughn, when you go out to speak?
Well, I tell you, Mr. Savage, actually, Karen speaks to the students, and if you would ask her what her message is, she can say it better than I can.
Please. Karen Vaughn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much for having us on tonight. My message to students is really simple. I want them to become more informed about what's happening in their government. I don't want them to be pawns in the hand of what's being fed to them by the liberal media. And I try to tell them to seek information, be informed, and to do your part in this world, to not sit back idly and let things happen around you with no action or recourse of your own, and especially don't be shameful enough to be completely unaware of what's happening.
Mrs. Vaughn, you say that although we cannot be engaged kinetically in the preservation of our republic as your son Aaron was, we now feel an obligation to become engaged culturally. That is a brilliant statement, and it's something that strikes a chord with me, because millions upon millions of Americans cannot become engaged kinetically to preserve our republic from all of the threats, internal and external, by the way. But they can become engaged culturally. Isn't that true?
That's exactly right. And I'll tell you something, Michael, that I really learned quickly as Billy and I launched this campaign to inform our circle of influence, is that people will listen to people they trust. There are people like you out there with mass audiences, but every single person isn't listening to you, right? And I wish they were, but they're not. But our circle of friends will listen to us, and they trust what we share. So I believe that everybody who is informed has not only a need to, but an obligation to get out there and spread the word if these things happen, especially Billy and I are taking up the cause of radical Islam in our country and the way it's taken over our country.
Right.
This
and yesterday,
very
yesterday,
concerning to us. Yes.
Well, that's right. Your son devoted his life to that.
That's right.
And the other day on the Continental Airlines plane, there were a couple of Islamic guys screaming Allah Akbar. They had to be subdued, not by the Homeland Security, not by TSA, but by ordinary men from Texas,
right,
who jumped up and subdued them.
Right,
thank
right,
God.
Because our country has become impotent in this entire battle. They have become completely impotent with political correctness, and it's nauseating as a mother of a son who gave his life to fight it.
Is there anything, Mr. and Mrs. Vaughn, didn't your son leave behind a wife and children?
He did.
A wife,
yes,
and two, yes, little children, yes.
Is there a foundation, is there any place that my listeners who have the biggest hearts in the country can make a donation? Do you have a website? Is there anything online where they can go and do something?
There is a Facebook page that's set up for Aaron, and there's information on there on how to donate to his children to a fund that, his wife has set up in their honor. And if you look for In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn on Facebook, you can find that page, and the information will be there for making donations. Thank you very much for asking that. Thank you.
In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-N. In Memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn. I recommend to all of my listeners who want to engage culturally to defend this country, because the government is too busy having a blues festival in the White House to pay any attention to this. A government that took a White House and turned it into a frat house, in my opinion. Don't get me started on that. But, okay, here we are. We the people have to do it. And you gave the ultimate. You gave the ultimate to this country. You gave the ultimate. And for people to sit back and say they can't do anything is utter nonsense. They can. And I'm going to recommend everybody listening to this show seek out that website, that Facebook page. And can I make a recommendation, Mrs. Vaughn? When you get around to it, set up a website that's very easy for people to remember. And if you want, I'll help you do it. And I'll put it up on my website absolutely free of charge so that the children who don't have a father have a little something to help them get through life.
Right. Thank you. We will do that. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
I don't want to pull you into this any deeper. I can imagine the depth to which you have already gone.
Mr. Savage.
Yes.
I'd like to say a couple other things. I don't want to say anything. I don't have anything to say at all about the military, but I'm engaged now culturally, and I'm working with the United West. And they are an organization that is fighting radical Islam. And Aaron, you know, Aaron was fighting radical Islam abroad. We need to fight it here at home because it is infiltrating us like a bad cold. I mean, it's just coming.
They're advising the FBI. They're telling the FBI director what they can say about radical Islam.
That is correct. And we have an administration that I cannot figure out the reason why they are so sympathetic to them, but it is among us, and it is going to overtake us if we don't wake up. And that's why we said on our website that we are engaged culturally. We have to win the war here in America. They know they cannot defeat us abroad. Their plan is to win the war right here, to soften the battlefield until they can do it right here. And I'd like to say two things in defense of the military while I'm on the phone. I'd appreciate it. One is, I'm sick and tired of people like Hillary Clinton and Leon Panetta and Jay Carney and people like that talking about our Marines because they urinate on Taliban. I'm not saying I would do that. I'm not saying it's right. But I'd like to see somebody in Washington, D.C. stand up for our military. And John McCain doing the same.
Mr. Vaughn, I wrote an article about this for USA Today. I was surprised that they let me do it. But I took the position of exactly your position about the alleged incident that after a firefight, we don't know what happened, how many Marines were shot, killed, blown up. After the firefight, the men who risked their lives peed on some corpses, and I'm supposed to get upset at them? Are you kidding me?
Exactly right. Let me tell you something, Mr. Savage. On the night that our son's chopper was shot down with the 29 other Americans, all that the AH-64 could do was fire suppressive fire to keep the enemy away from the bodies of the warriors. And you know why? You know why they do that? Because they will mutilate the bodies. They will mutilate the bodies. Nothing is said about that. All we have is somebody like Hillary Clinton saying, these are not our American values. I doubt Hillary Clinton has any American values that are the same as mine.
Amen. I don't think she knows what an American value is. She's hardly in this country. She's too busy placating the greater world. Because after all, she's a citizen of the world, Mr. Vaughn. You can't expect her to pay much attention to the little old country called the U.S. of A.
That's exactly right. And now today, one more time, Mr. Savage, we have an American general in Afghanistan apologizing again for our troops.
Oh, my God. We played that yesterday. It set off a shockwave, Mr. Vaughn. Did you hear that soundbite?
Here again, though, as far as I can understand, we did what was right. They were not supposed to ride in the Qurans, and then they are according to...
Absolutely. These Qurans were part and parcel of materials that were in the holding cells, or the cells, rather, of the equivalent of prisoners of war, who were then released from their cells, and their books were burned because they had messages in them. How hard is that for the general to understand?
No, I just don't get it, sir. I do not.
Well, look, I think we both see the picture. Unfortunately, it may be as ugly as we fear. It may not just be political correctness. Some of us think that the government, or at least some in the government, are playing for the other team. And we should leave it at that, because there's only so far we can go on an open microphone to millions of Americans. Again, I want to repeat, for those of you who are listening, we are speaking with the parents of one of the brave, heroic Americans who was unnecessarily killed on August 6, 2011, when he and 29 other fearless American warriors were put into a CH-47 Chinook in the black of night and never came back. And his name, that you never forget it, is Aaron Carson Vaughn. And he has a Facebook page that his wife set up. Maybe the people can find it. And what is the Facebook page again, please?
In memory of Navy SEAL Aaron Vaughn.
Now, do you folks have your own website?
We do. We do. That site is For Our Son. That's FOROURSON.US. ForOurSon.US.
And that will give people some information about your sacrifice.
Yes, sir, yeah. It will, and about what Karen and I are trying to do, and we started putting an occasional blog on there and providing people with information, and we're beginning to try to do our part and pick up where our son left off.
Well, I want to say thanks to Aaron Klein, who was a writer for WorldNet Daily, who gave me your contact and said you'd be willing to speak, and Mr. and Mrs. Vaughn, believe me, America respects you from the bottom of their hearts. Pay no attention to those in Washington. As you well know, there's this disconnect between those at the top and those of us who have to run our lives. God bless you, and thank you very much for what you've done for this country. This is the Savage Nation, ForOurSon.us, ForOurSon.us. God bless Billy and Karen Vaughn, and in the memory of Aaron Carson Vaughn, I take a quick break.
Savage.
Yeah, welcome back to Savage Nation. Look, to me, that was radio at its finest. You know, you could say what you want about it, but those people gave their son one of America's best, not the garbage that they put out of Hollywood, the fake heroes. This was the real McCoy, and he's dead. Now, who made that decision to put all of those SEALs into one old helicopter? I keep asking one question. Now, I've read blogs on the internet on this. And some former special ops guys are saying that they were sent to their death on purpose by someone in the Obama administration. I don't know whether to believe it. I don't know what to believe anymore. All I know is they're dead. Dead is dead. Why would they do that? Well, let's see what the conspiracists are saying. Remember what happened prior to this. Osama bin Laden was killed by Navy SEALs, remember? Remember they went and got him? But they had three fast, the latest model attack helicopters, remember? They went and snatched him out of shot him up in his house. Three fast helicopters. In fact, one was shot down or fell down on its own. Now, a few months later, what did somebody in the Obama administration do? A deal with the enemy saying, look, we're sorry we killed Osama bin Laden. We're going to sacrifice some SEALs to show you how sorry we are. I don't know whether to believe a thing like this. But when you got a guy in the White House who in the middle of what we're facing is having a blues party, turning it into a disgusting frat house, as far as I'm concerned, and I don't care what you say about me. They have trashed the White House. He should be celebrating the SEALs. He should be welcoming the parents of the dead SEALs, not the blues singers.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome back, or welcome to the program. We were talking about the Santorum Satan Savage WND article on top of the Drudge Report. We were then talking to the parents of one of the Navy SEALs who lost his life in that catastrophic decision to put so many Navy SEALs aboard one old Chinook helicopter and throw them into a combat situation from which they never returned. There's been almost no press on this, and yet Obama's commander-in-chief. He's commander-in-chief, and yet he lost more SEALs in one incident than in the entire history of the U.S. Navy SEAL division. How come the great geniuses in the news media don't talk about that? How come they don't talk about the fact that the number of Americans that don't pay income taxes is now at 49.5%? And most of these 49.5% of bums who pay no income taxes receive generous federal benefits. Now you say, well, it's always been that way. You're wrong. Back in 1970, the number was 12%. That is, 12% of the U.S. population did not pay income taxes. Now it's grown to 49.5%. And the Heritage Foundation teaches us that one of the most worrying trends is the coincidental growth in the non-taxpaying public, the percentage of people who do not pay federal income taxes and who are not claimed as dependents by someone who does, jumped from 14.8% in 1984 to 49.5% in 2009. That means an astounding 151 million Americans paid nothing in 2009. In 1984, it was only 34 million tax filers paid no taxes. Now, how did this happen? How did we come to this point where Americans don't pay income taxes and they take and take and take? This government cannot survive. This government is gone unless this is reversed. Unless the taxes at the bottom are increased to the extent that they need to be increased, and unless these entitlement spendings are cut in half, we're dead. We're Greece. We're worse than Greece. We're Greece without the Doric columns. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Portland to Houston flight turns around due to Middle Eastern passenger yelling Allah Akbar, lighting an e-cigarette, not taking orders, and other passengers had to pin him down. Not a word from Janet Napolitano, not a word from TSA, not a word from the FBI, nothing. But listen to what the passenger said went on that plane, the dry run from Portland to Texas. Listen to 07.
He was screaming, Allah is great, Allah is great, you know, and it kind of worries you when all of that happens. But believe me, there were enough men to hold him down.
Absolutely. Every guy that was in my area was ready to go. I mean, it was not even a thought. You could tell the buckles were off. People were already leading towards the aisles.
It almost made me cry to see the way everybody responded, because the gentleman that could help got up and helped the stewardess. She was just a little bitty thing.
She ran back, and she got the plastic handcuffs and ankle cuffs.
You know, it's just happened what should have happened. Everybody got up and did a part that needed to do it.
Right. No federal marshals, no TSA, no FBI, nothing but American citizens. And while this was going on, Obama did not fiddle. Instead, he sang blues music. Instead of welcoming the parents of the dead SEALs to the White House, he hosted a party at the White House to honor the heritage of blues music. Listen to clip 8.
You can have the blues anywhere and anytime, but for Michelle and me, there's no blues like the song our artist have chosen to close with, the blues from our hometown, Sweet Home Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen.
There it is. Now you got it. From the White House to the frat house in one administration. If you'd like to call the show, it's 1-800-449-8255. It's a world turned upside down by a man who wants to transform everything good and turn it into everything bad, in my opinion. One man's opinion. It's as simple as that. Now, tonight there's another debate in about 50 minutes. Again, we're watching suicide by debate in the Republican Party. Yes, you heard it first in the Savage Nation, but not the last time it will be used. Suicide by debate. Again, genuflecting before the rats in the media who hate them and pit them against each other. The rats will not ask one question about the 49.5% of Americans who don't pay income taxes. Not one of the rat moderators will ask why there's been no investigation of the deaths of these Navy SEALs and so forth and so on. You fill in the blanks. You create the question you know that you'd like asked tonight that won't be asked by the rat in a silk suit. Let's go to the callers in Pennsylvania. We begin with Ernest. Ernest, thank you for calling the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Thomas Savage, that interview with those parents, that was heart-wrenching. Heart-wrenching. My heart goes out to all the Navy SEALs.
It was. I had to control my own emotions during it because, remember, these are parents who lost their son. And this was one of the best and the smartest and the bravest of all Americans, a man who knew he was risking his life when he joined the Navy SEALs, and his life was thrown away for no reason whatsoever other than a bad decision by someone in the Pentagon who has never been called on the carpet. That's the bottom line here, and I know people in the media who are investigating this, and I think you're going to see an awful lot more about who made this decision. Who made this decision to put those SEALs on one helicopter and throw them into a combat zone in the middle of the night? Who made that decision? Was it some girl from Harvard with no military experience who overrode an actual Navy SEAL commander and said, you know what, put him on a Chinook, you know, we can fly him in there. It's plenty of protection there. I'm running off with Hillary. We have a meeting right now. You know, we'll be right. Put him on the Chinook. It uses less gas, I read in the report somewhere. I got to run off right now. Go kill amongst yourselves. How do we know who made that decision? I can go into the joke if you want. But if you think that is theoretically far from the truth, that mocking little story I just told you, you're mistaken. You know, in the old days of the Soviet Union, within every military unit, every Soviet military unit, there was a KGB political officer. Let's say it was a submarine under the water. On that submarine of brave Russian submariners, there was a political officer, not a combat individual himself or herself. His job was to make sure that all of the sailors on the Soviet submarine were towing the political line, the Communist Party line. Anyone who was not sufficiently supportive of the Soviet government, anyone who seemed to be a little subversive with regard to the administration, was reported by this KGB officer. If you tell me you don't think that at this point in our history, we don't have the equivalent of KGB officers in the military, then you don't know what the heck you're talking about. Go listen to blues music. And you're going to be singing the blues if this guy ever gets reelected. That's all I can tell you. In my opinion, you'll be singing the blues, my friend, because that's all that'll be left for you. 1-800-449-8255. Let us go again to Pennsylvania on this helicopter situation. Robert in Pittsburgh, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
I crewed U.S. Army CH-47s for 5 years, and all my buddies I served with, we both, you know, email each other and all stuff, and so much protocol was subverted on that night that it could be nothing other than a setup.
Okay, this is what I want to hear, Robert. Let's start from the top. CH-47 Chinook, how old, what does that go back to the Vietnam era?
They were first fielded by Boeing in 1958 as the Alpha model and were used extensively through the Vietnam era, clean till today.
Okay, why was that helicopter used instead of the most advanced attack helicopters on that night mission?
Because it was a setup. It was a setup from the get-go that used the same flight path as the former Chalk that went through that valley that night. Them RPG gunners were waiting. They knew that bird was coming to that same exact path. And steels are never used, hardly ever, on QRF missions like that. It's usually elements from the 10th Mountain or other Rangers that are sitting at close a moment's notice. Steels are worth their weight in gold. They're used for high-value target capture, other missions like this.
Now, in addition to the SEALs being put on a mission for which they're not usually used, Rangers were killed as well, and some Afghani equivalents. Why do you think they were put on that helicopter? Are you of the conspiracy theory group that thinks they were sacrificed in order to placate the Taliban because Obama had killed Osama bin Laden?
Either that or somebody lied to them and put bait out there, as in they said there was a juicy target out there that the SEALs really wanted to get. You could never get – they are followed by a golden rule, and that's one team, one spot, one time. You never put more than one team of SEALs on one bird. And secondly, we always use a diversion landing zone. So there's always –
Wait, let me back this up for the non-military amongst us, including myself. How many SEALs died in that helicopter crash that Obama ordered? 22?
Yes.
Okay. And you say that normally there's smaller units put into several different helicopters. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, they operate in six-man teams usually.
Six-man teams. Somebody put 22 of them in one helicopter? One Vietnam-era helicopter in the middle of the night? I've been asking about this for a year now.
All my friends that I served with, we all listen to your show. We think it's great. We all believe that you hit the nail on the head when you said this was a setup. Because it doesn't make sense militarily, tactically, strategically. It was a setup from the get-go.
But when you say setup, let's carry this conspiracy to its logical conclusion. What do you mean setup? By who?
By a subversive enemy within our highest-ranking military branches. There's somebody that's an Al-Qaeda sympathizer or just a jihadi themselves that set this up. Look what happened to the CIA agents in Pakistan who were blown up by a Jordanese spy. You know, how'd that happen? Our best and brightest let this guy walk right...
Wait, how about the blues singer in the White House sending the most advanced drone into Iran and it lands without a scratch and the Air Force says we don't know why or how? Is that possible that we have, again, the same operative doing this?
Possibly. It could be a whole ring of people. We don't know to that extent until there's a congressional hearing. And there probably never will be because it's so...
Well, tonight we have a debate with the great Republican Party. You would think one of the geniuses who are so conservative, Ron Paul, perhaps, or the great Newt Gingrich, would raise this issue and override the liberal moderator and say, excuse me, I'm not answering that question. I want to talk about why so many Navy SEALs were killed in that mission. I'd like to see one of the candidates say that ever. Why are they not saying it? Why are the Republicans silent, sir?
They don't have a spine. That's my only say. They'd rather see their country swept away than stand up for what's right and what this country was founded on. That's one of the reasons I got out of the military service, because I couldn't stand to serve under a communist, Stalinist leader like President Obama.
No, you can't say that about him. He had a very nice party last night in the White House for blues singers.
Yeah, maybe they'll have some illegal immigrants over, too.
He ought to celebrate South of the Border culture again. Perhaps, and maybe he can have the Department of Homeland Security there and celebrating with them. You know, that's the way it's done. My friend, it's very serious business that we're involved in, and we discuss these things, as you well know, at some peril. When we fear our own government, and when we have conspiracies that we fear are occurring by our own government, what do we the people do? What do we the people do? I had these parents on who gave the ultimate sacrifice to this country. They lost their son. This is no longer rhetoric. And there must be a congressional investigation. There must be. I'm hoping that as a result of this broadcast tonight, one of the congressmen, at least one on the Armed Services Committee, will hold a hearing. There are some who listen to this show. And it's worthy of a hearing, especially in an election year. Don't you think so?
Yes, I believe so.
I would say this is a bigger scandal than Fast and Furious and the death of Border Agent Terry. And I don't care what the vermin in the media do or don't do. I can guarantee you that with the talk radio and the internet, that hearing would get every American listening to it. I can guarantee you if we get one congressman to pick up this story and run with it, we'll get to the bottom of this. Thank you for your service to this country, and this is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, you go to the major websites, you go to foxnews.com, UVA lacrosse player found guilty. I don't understand this. You're telling me that Americans who literally worship our military heroes, incidentally, they worship them. There's a movie out about SEALs. Everyone is. Why are there no stories about the single greatest loss of Navy SEALs in the history of the Navy SEALs by this commander-in-chief instead of a blues festival in the White House? You'd think it's a natural story, wouldn't you? Okay, so you say, oh, the liberal media is covering up for Obama. That's true. Well, then you got the Republicans on the other side who are theoretically the opposition party. You'd say, okay, they stand more for American traditional values. And during these debates, somebody would bring it up. Has it ever come up? No. So you ask, well, wait a minute. Then both parties have decided to cover up the death of all these Navy SEALs in one incident, ordered by Obama into a no-win situation. Or by Panetta, whoever the defense secretary was at the time. I don't even know if it was Panetta. And I don't know if he had any hands-on experience in ordering that. I don't know who did it. Do you? Who did this? Now, why do I care? Because if so many SEALs could be killed in one incident and there's no discussion of it and no investigation, it means this country can be taken over with the drop of a hat. It's all about, that's what it means. That's what it means. That's exactly what it means. That would mean that if, 22 congressmen were put on a bus and they went off a cliff, it would be forgotten 2 days later because, nobody wants to hear about it. They want to go and look at some dirtbags from Staten Island or from New Jersey on a television set. They want to look at the lowest slime in the history of mankind glorified by the vermin who run the media. That's what you pay. You know, when I was in the fifth grade, a teacher said to me, I'm separating you from a certain guy you hang around with because I found that students always go to the lowest common denominator. The good ones always get pulled down by the bad. So that's because the vermin in the media want you to look at the slugs of humanity, the solenterates of humanity who march around with gold chains and the all hanging out. That's what's supposed to be done.
Savage.
You had an ad, but you pulled it this week, in which you described Governor Romney as the most anti-immigrant candidate. Why did you do that?
Are you concerned at all about the influence of the Tea Party?
Is he still the most anti-immigrant candidate?
Your initial reaction to the Ryan plan, the radical right-wing social engineering. Then you backtrack. Why?
Tax returns. You said Governor Romney, after he released his taxes, are you satisfied right now with the level of transparency?
Well, there they are. You were listening to Suicide by Debate. They had it in their hands. It was theirs to lose. And, of course, as you well know, Obama is celebrating with a blues singing fest in the White House, turning the White House into a frat house, in the opinion of millions of Americans. It's astounding that he gets away with this, and you know why. It's because of a complicit media and a dumb public, in plain English. Complicit media and a dumb public. Or is it a public that's jaded, not so stupid, but they feel they have no power anymore? They feel they've lost their country and they're just enjoying the Titanic as it goes down. You know what I'm saying? Is it like, and the band played on? Is that what's going on? So that's it. So I have a radio show. Every day I got to get up and say, well, what am I going to talk about? I'm going to talk about a meatball. I'm going to talk about a recipe. I'm going to talk. I do. But then once in a while, some stories come along that you say you got to cover. This was one of them. This was one of them. It's a nation of 300 and some odd million people, and I told you the life story of one of them whose life is over. I had the parents of this Navy SEAL on the show, and if you heard the interview, you heard something you're never going to forget. If you didn't hear it, we'll play it again over the next few weeks, I'm sure. And now tonight we have a debate. Again, we have the same opportunity to have the same opportunity to discuss the worst loss of Navy SEALs in one incident in history, and none of them will do it. Now, you want to hear something funny? I got a strange thought during the break. Do you remember Jimmy Carter? Remember the worst president in American history until Obama? Remember him? Now, Carter lost for a number of reasons, bad economy, etc. But one of the images that Americans were made to remember about Carter was the mixed up, disastrous mission to rescue hostages in Iran with helicopters crashing into each other in the desert. Remember that? And Carter was ruined as a result of that, and rightly so. We saw a man who had literally no ability to be commander-in-chief as president, a weak-willed liberal, who the image was forever. It's like the guy from Massachusetts with the tank. I forget his name. Does anyone know his name? Remember Dukakis? He was another liberal from Massachusetts who was making some waves. Then one picture appeared of him looking like a chipmunk inside a tank. That was the end of his career. Well, Carter was known for one image, and that was helicopters crashing in the desert. If we truly had an opposition party, the Republicans would be showing images of the dead SEALs, the helicopters, the downed, even if they had to fabricate the picture. Because, you know, by the way, there's no pictures of the downed helicopter. The press purged them as they did in the ex-Soviet Union. As a favor to the DNC and to Obama. But all I have to do is put together a picture of the crashed helicopter, strewn bodies, and then flash to the faces of the dead SEALs, and just say, Obama presided over the death of more SEALs in one mission than in the history of the unit. Is he fit to be commander-in-chief again? End of story, over. I don't care how many blues festivals he has to appease those who pay no taxes, no doubt, in the country to show what a cool guy he is. It ain't going to happen. Because, see, this election's not in the hands of the 49.5% who don't pay any taxes. They're going to either not vote, or they're going to vote for a welfare giver-in-chief. That's right. You heard it right. The 49.5% of Americans who pay no income taxes, either they're going to vote for the welfare giver-in-chief or not vote at all. The Republican faithful will vote for any Republican. That we know. But what about the vast in-between numbers of people, especially now the blue-collar white guy who was bamboozled by Obama before because their union bosses told them how to vote, or because they didn't like McCain, whatever. They were bamboozled. That's the audience. Now, if that audience was shown what was done to these SEALs by the blues man in chief, that'd be the end of it. It's over. They'd vote for any Republican over him. But we don't see this happening. Now you ask yourself, why? That's the next question. Let's use logic together. Why? Because the advisors to Romney are identical to the advisors to McCain during the last election. They have told Romney to shun any controversial issue. They've told Romney to avoid the Savage Nation or any other show where there's a true conservative host. They've told Romney to continue to say nothing. They've told Romney to just do nothing, say nothing, be nothing. As a result, his campaign is nowhere. Now, so there's your answer. I can't control what they do. I can't control what they do. All I can do is talk about what I want to talk about and hope to God some truth comes out of it. You know, my novel, Abuse of Power, has a hero in it named Jack Hatfield. He was it's about a journalist, a true journalist, as opposed to the garbage we have today, who was the host of a television show called Truth Tellers, a national show. And he was smeared in this novel by an immigrant from Austria by the name of Soren, who owns one media outlet after another, smears them with millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, groups that are akin to some of the groups that operate in America. He hires these ex-reporters to smear guys like me. And so Jack Hatfield gets smeared, loses his job, and he goes on to save San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge from a terrorist attack. That was novel number one, Abuse of Power. Right now, I'm going to shock you right now because you're going to remember this, by the way, for at least a year. Right now, I'm almost finished with the next book, but it won't be out for a year. You ready for this one? Do you know how this book opens? Do you know what the opening scene in that book is of Jack Hatfield? It opens with a helicopter going down in Afghanistan where 22 Navy SEALs are killed. That's right. That's what the novel's about. Got chills up your spine? Well, you'll have to wait a year for that one. Before that one comes, Trickle Down Tyranny. Nonfiction, factual, encyclopedic, delineates everything that the Obama administration has done, is doing, and will do, and expresses the mere sentiment that unless he is not elected again, the country's finished. Forget about the word socialist, because unto itself, it has no meaning. So will America become socialist? It is socialist. What do you mean, will it become? When you got 49.5% of the people not paying taxes and receiving inordinate social benefits that they're not entitled to, what you have is socialism, don't you? What do you mean it's going to become socialist? It is socialist. It didn't start with Obama. It started with Eisenhower. Unfortunately, it magnified it. It was greatly distorted under George Bush, who created a larger federal government in his administration than the previous three. I called him a fiscal socialist. Many of you true blue Republicans hated me for it. You thought I was being disloyal. I wasn't being disloyal. I'm an independent. I call him like I see him. I'm Casey Stengel Savage, so to speak. No one knows who Casey Stengel is. He was from Brooklyn anyway, and I'm from the Bronx. So the fact of the matter is, I don't even like the guy. And I wasn't even a Dodgers fan, but I was a Yankees fan at the time when I was a boy. But I'm not a boy anymore. I'm not a fan of any team. I have no interest in baseball, no interest in football, no interest in basketball, no interest in hockey, no interest in table tennis, no interest in any of those things. If you do, God bless you. I don't. That's all. You're entitled to be a politically active guy and be interested in sports. In fact, it's probably subversive not to be interested in sports. I would suggest that it probably is un-American to not be rooting for a team. I would say that that's a litmus test of a real American. Anyone who isn't interested in a team, it should be investigated at some point for not being American enough. That's the way it is. I mean, you really investigate someone who's not interested in sports, you don't know what you're going to find. You have no idea what's underneath that. You don't know what's inside that person's mind. And the true test of an American is sports fanaticism. And so, for example, if you're the head of an intelligence agency, you should appear with a baseball cap to show that you're just like the average Joe. Or you should be seen photographed with people from New Jersey who have overly large derrieres, overly large chains of gold, and overly small brains. That's what you need to be seen to be seen with if you want to be a real politician. Instead of kissing babies, what you do is you kiss the behinds of the lowest slime that America could possibly produce. And then, of course, the czars of Hollywood, Tsar Nikolai and Tsar Spielberg and Tsar Katzenberg, and Tsar Hatzenberg and Tsar Ratzenberg will then support you if you march around with a baseball cap, which is why Tsar Spielberg is seen with baseball caps, to show you he's one of you. Tsar Spielberg, yeah, that's the way it is. So pardon me for my sarcasm. I had to go into sarcasm to defend myself from some of the emotional feelings that were stirred up today, not only by the baby on the sidewalk with an epileptic attack, but also by the parents of the Navy SEAL who was killed as a result of someone inside this government who made the decision to put them on a Vietnam-era helicopter and throw them into a combat zone and fly them on the same coordinates that they were that the helicopters were flown over and over again. Something's wrong with this picture. One of the girls from Harvard, one of the boys from Stanford, one of them may have made that decision before rushing off to a blues festival at the White House. We don't know. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. The Marines investigate guys who pee on the corpses of guys who try to kill them, but they don't investigate who in the Pentagon ordered all these SEALs onto a helicopter. The government investigates Marines who do the job too well, but don't investigate their commanders who put them on a helicopter and they die? Excuse me. Is there something wrong with that particular picture? Well, as I say, let's go back to the beginning. Let's rewind the tape, boys and girls. Jimmy Carter, two helicopters smashing into each other in the desert on a failed rescue mission, end of the Jimmy Carter presidency. Never got reelected, right? Let's speed the clock forward. Show the helicopter. Show the destroyed Chinook helicopter. There's no pictures of it, by the way. They're classified. but you can certainly, if you're the Republican National Committee, you can reconstruct such a picture and then flash the pictures of all the dead Navy SEALs, and a voice comes on and says, more Navy SEALs died in this mishap than in the history of the entire unit. Is Obama, picture of Obama, fit to be commander-in-chief, paid for by the RNC? Would you ever see that commercial? I doubt it. You want me to give you some other commercials for free? Show the millions of illegal aliens sneaking across the border with the complicity of the Department of Homeland Security. Then show a picture of the dead Border Patrol agent, Brian Terry. Then show machine guns being brought across the border in suitcases by operatives. And then ask the questions. I mean, come on. I don't have to be in advertising to ask a question, do I? Ha ha, ho ho. Hey, hey, ho, ho, ha, ha, ho, ho. Let's have fun. Let's just tell jokes. Let's just be nice guys. Let's be Jerry Seinfeld. Let's be Robert De Niro. Let's be Marty Scorsese. Let's be all the cultural icons who say nothing, do nothing, see nothing, are nothing, but actors and puppets. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, you're all getting ready to see the suicide by debate come up with the salenterates from CNN dragging the Republicans further down as fast as they can while Obama continues to have parties in the White House. Here's a report you should know about dirty surgical tools in hospitals putting patients at risk. We're becoming a third world nation, as you well know. A third world nation for sure in many ways, socially, culturally, and now medically. Here's a guy, 63 years old, goes into surgery, major hospital, to repair his rotator cuff, comes out of the hospital, and he develops an infection that eats away at his shoulder bone and rotator cuff. So the Centers for Disease Control stops its politics for a few seconds, does an investigation, and they find out that the infection was the result of surgical tools which had traces of human tissue and blood caked into them. Not cleaned properly. They followed the cleaning instructions provided by the tool's manufacturer, but apparently that wasn't good enough. And so here we are. You go in a dental office, you don't know what you're going to get. You know, every time I got dental work, no matter how good they are, I always feel a little, you know, something's wrong. You got something there. But what about surgery? I mean, would you have ever heard of a thing like this in America 20 years ago? So what is the reason for the demise, or let us say the slow, slow, slow fall downward, even in our medical system? Years ago, surgical tools were made of steel and glass. So sterilizing them was easy. You put them through a shot of steam. But today, doctors use high-tech, flexible endoscopes and surgical robotics, which can become clogged with debris that is not visible to the naked eye, which is why I will never, ever get another colonoscopy. Remember I told you the story a few years ago when they put the pipe in me? Never. Will I ever let them put that kielbasa in me again? Never. Never. I will never let it. I mean, the idea of it was, to begin with, is so antithetical to my nature. But on top of it all, when the kielbasa came out, and I looked at it, I said, wait a minute, how do I know the kielbasa's clean, et cetera? You know, they all had a big laugh in there. But we don't know whether the cleaning process is proper. You look at a colonoscopy. It's a high-tech, flexible item. How do you know how clean it is? What, they got a minimum wage guy in the place? You're going to trust that he did the job right while he was on the cell phone? The guy's on his iPhone with one hand. He's rinsing the tool with the other. Yeah, and the proper solution. So that's the solution today. That's why I say eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow may never come. Yeah, you have to have a certain dark sense of humor. You know, it's like being a cancer doctor every day. If you ever let that stuff get into your head at a certain point, you can't go up. You can't get up in the morning. And looking at America today as a talk show host is like being an oncologist. A social and cultural oncologist is what I feel like most of the time. You know, you see various and sundry rots. Here you got guys, Muslims screaming Allah Akbar, lighting an electronic cigarette on a plane. They're taken down by passengers. And the official announcement is no announcement at all. We're coming back from the alley, the lanes there, and we heard about the Continental flight, but there's nothing to worry about. He was just a belligerent passenger. It was misunderstood by a group of racist rednecks who took down a Middle Easterner, and we're going to be investigating the passengers from Texas.
who jumped on this poor Muslim guy. And we'll get back to you, because that's our job as the federal government, to make sure there's no racism in the country and the Middle Easterners aren't picked on. That's basically what you got. Did you hear this story? Portland to Houston turns around due to Middle Eastern passenger yelling and lighting an e-cigarette. Not a word from the government, but a Continental says it was the result of a belligerent passenger. But here's what one of the Texans on the plane had to say in clip 7.
He was screaming, Allah is great, Allah is great, you know, and it kind of worries you when all of that happens. But believe me, there were enough men to hold him down.
Absolutely. Every guy that was in that in my area was ready to go. I mean, it was not even a thought. You could tell the buckles were off. People were already leaning towards the aisles.
It almost made me cry to see the way everybody responded, because the gentleman that could help got up and helped the stewardess. She was just a little bitty thing.
She ran back, and she got the plastic handcuffs and ankle cuffs.
You know, it's just happened what should have happened. Everybody got up and did a part that needed to do it.
Well, we'll be investigating. The girls over at DHS and I, we got a full investigation going on now. Of these racist Texans who jumped on these poor Middle Easterners. And if they have broken the law in any way or violated the civil rights of these Muslim gentlemen, there's no question there's going to be consequences, because truthfully, you should leave these things, you know, to the government. And there was no reason for anyone to do anything, very much along the lines of the Italian passenger liner. If they had listened to Captain Scatino, I mean, they'd all be dead, but nevertheless, they would have followed protocol, you know. The issue is that Captain Scatino was in charge. He was watching the ship go down from the safety of a lifeboat. And the passengers jumped in the water, frankly, they put their lives at risk. And we at DHS are very, very, very concerned about passenger safety. So we suggest if ever you see an incident like this, you just let the plane go down. Because at least you won't be interfering with the protocol of the DHS or the FBI or the TSA. And the important thing is that you follow orders. It's better to go down with the ship than to upset the rule book, you know. And that's why I say, yeah, and the band played on. This is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage.com.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. The Drudge Report posted Michael Savage's remarks that Rick Santorum is right about Satan having his sights on the USA. Santorum is right about Satan. Now, he doesn't mean it literally. He means it figuratively. Do you agree with Santorum? We're also talking about the deaths of all of those Navy SEALs on the helicopter that went down in Afghanistan late last year. The cover-up. Also, do you believe that the disturbance on board the Continental Airlines plane yesterday, in which a Muslim passenger shouted, Allah Akbar, was anything less than a terrorist dry run? Of course, Continental Airlines in the Obama administration said it was just a passenger lighting an e-cigarette. Where is Homeland Security with this statement? Why have we heard nothing from the FBI? Where were the air marshals? The passengers had to take this bum down. Do you believe the Muslim terrorists were attempting a dry run on this flight because it was bound for the left-wing city of Portland, Oregon? Tonight's Republican debate will be the 20th in this campaign. Are you going to watch it or ignore it? How much suicide can you watch?
There's a whole rationale which is now built on his ability to win, and he hasn't been able to win. If he loses his home state, and I assume that they're going to throw the kitchen sink at Santorum because that's the Romney style. If they lose their home, his home state, I don't see what he says the next morning to his donors to stay in the race.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers' softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better. Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com. And here is the latest news on michaelsavage.com. Savage says Santorum is right about Satan. He doesn't mean it literally. He means it figuratively. Muslims screaming Allah is great, arrested on a Continental Airlines flight. But Homeland Security had nothing to say. Continental said it was just a passenger trying to light an e-cigarette. Seems other passengers didn't see it that way. They took him down. They jumped on the religion of peace. Muslims screaming Allah is great. Tackled by other passengers. Bravo to the brave and sharp passengers on this flight. Okay? He was screaming, Allah is great, Allah is great. Amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. The average Westerner knows all too well what Allahu Akbar means on an airplane. No doubt the care thugs will file a hate crime suit against the brave and alert passengers and the Continental airline. Unbelievable. That's the spirit. Now, obviously, the men who had the guts to take him down were Islamophobes who just wanted to tarnish the good reputation of those practicing the religion of peace, love, and tolerance. Finally, on this issue of the Muslim screaming Allah is great, arrested after causing a disturbance on a Continental flight, I think all of the passengers on that plane should be forced to go before the Muslim pressure groups and to get on their hands and knees and apologize to those two peaceful cavemen. Just like the general in the White House and the ISAF commander apologized the other day to the peaceful Afghani troglodytes. What else is in the news? Well, let's see. New York Times bestselling author of yours truly, Michael Savage's new book, Trickle Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. Pre-order your copy today on michaelsavage.com. Iran court convicts Christian pastor convert to death. That's the peaceful Iranian civilization that Oliver Stone's Spawn went to. Put to death for leaving Islam. Democrats are moving to buy newspapers in swing state. That's right. Sale of Philadelphia's two dailies bought by the Democrats. How do you like that living in Argentina? Protesters throw eggs at Muhammad cartoonist. Obama's double talk on sky-high gas prices, $6 a gallon. Woman in El Paso shot by bullet fired from Mexico. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Let's go to the bottom and see what's new. Kanye West, I'm not up to trick names. He has a charity. It spends no money on charity. None of more than $500,000 of this charity went to charitable causes, according to the New York Post. Kanye West charity spends lots of money, it says, but not just on charity. Hip-hop superstar Kanye West spent more than $500,000 in 2010, but none of that money went to actual charitable causes, the Daily reported yesterday, Tuesday. An analysis of federal tax filings reveals that in 2010, the West Foundation had expenditures totaling $572,000, with the majority going to salaries and other overhead expenses. Meanwhile, Kanye West's hip-hop charity gave nothing to charity that year. According to its tax return, West's foundation made precisely $0 in contributions, gifts, and grants. See, this is what you get from a hip-hop star, right? You get all hip and no hop. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Whoa, boy, you don't want to know. But I suggest you go there to check it out because I guess you need to know all the news that the mudstream media doesn't give you. Yes, the mudstream media doesn't want you to know it. Tonight, another debate. Well, I won't be there. I'll be right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I know what's coming. I can feel it in my bones. You want to read the tea leaves. You want to do any analysis you have to do. I know what's coming. Iran has the Quran. We have the Constitution. It's freedom versus despotism. We're not going to give in to these retrograde throwbacks. They're not going to stop on their march to getting an atomic bomb and trying to wipe us off the map. There's going to be a war, and there's going to be hell to pay, and there's no way out of it. It's that simple.
We have common cause and common concerns with Israel and with the international community about Iran. We've made very clear that Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon. We will not tolerate an Iran that has a nuclear weapon. We've made clear that we will not tolerate an Iran that tries to block the Straits of Hormuz. A fifth of the oil of the world goes through those straits. They're international waters. We're not going to allow them to block that. We have implemented strong diplomatic sanctions. We have implemented very strong economic sanctions. And we're continuing to do that. Sanctions that are in many ways crippling Iran.
We are going to war with Iran. We have to go to war with Iran. And the sooner we go to war with them, the better it will be for us. Now, I'm going to tell you more about it as the days and the weeks progress, but it's going to happen. Why? Because we have to go to war with Iran. The longer we wait, the more they can organize Hezbollah both abroad and in America to strike back, and they will strike us here. And that's when, of course, America and the armed America that I know is there must be called upon by this cowardly, spineless, retrograde, degenerate government. We keep hearing, oh, if we attack Iran from the air, they're going to trigger Hezbollah in America. Well, guess what? There's probably 30 million armed people in this country, and of that 30 million, many of them are trained ex-military, trained law enforcement. We could hunt them down. We could form brigades in this country. But you see, we have a government that is so afraid of the people and has such contempt for the people that the last thing they would want you to do is to be organized into militias to defend yourself the way the Constitution permits you to be organized. I don't think you understand how grave the situation is. We are threatened from a retrograde throwback Islamofascism, and make no mistake about it, it is not going away. Their Bible is the Quran. Our Bible is the U.S. Constitution. We're never going to give up our freedoms for this throwback religion. Let me be very clear. I'm not going to put my wife in a hit. I don't want to hear any more about Islam. I don't want to hear one more word. I'm sick of you, is what I'd like to say. But since I have no audience and since I don't exist, that will not be heard by anyone. My audience is not real, the 12 million people. So therefore, what I just said doesn't have any meaning. What matters is the nice humdrum sports and Paris Hilton's perfume and which sports star got a $90 million a day contract, and which pervert just took another girl to a private island, and which jerk just got another hair transplant. You know, that's what's more important to you. But I'm telling you right now, your government is failing you. Your federal government has failed you on the border, as I've told you, since 1994. And thank God for all of the Johnny-come-latelys who joined the Borders Language Culture crowd. You're all welcome to join it. But let me tell you something else. That's the past. The present is defending yourself against the Islamofascists amongst us. And make no mistake about it. We're going to have to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities. And the sooner we do it, the less damage there will be in this country. But make no mistake about it. If we did it today, if we did it tomorrow, there would be bombs going off in shopping malls. There'd be bombs going off, pipe bombs. IEDs going off in this country. God knows what's going to happen. And there aren't enough police to stop them. The police are bound by rules of engagement on top of it all, where they can't even operate until there's a body bag or a bomb that goes off. We need to self-defense. And let me tell you something today to protect us from the Islamo-fascists amongst about what I said. I know what needs to be done to defend this country. And I'm telling you like it is. I could see the future, and the future is very dire indeed. And it's because we have a government that is more afraid of the people of this country, the law-abiding people of this country. They hate you. They have contempt for you. They spit on you. All they do is see you as a sheep to be sheared for taxes and to vote like a moron. They don't really want you to defend yourself. They want you to turn over your power to them to defend you. And then they want to seize your guns from you. And make no mistake about it, they quicker seize your guns than they would tell you to organize a militia. History is repeating itself right in front of our eyes, and many of you don't even understand that history is repeating itself. The Hitler of our time, the president of Iran, is the Hitler of our time. He sounds like Hitler. His machinations are that of Hitler. His words are that of Hitler. Now, the question is, how would you have behaved in 1939? Because that's how you have to behave today. And I'm trying to warn you, just as Churchill tried to warn the British, what was coming. It doesn't matter whether I am right or wrong. It doesn't matter whether you believe me. It's happening. They are on a collision course with the West. He wants a collision with the West. The trick is to kill him and knock out the mullahs before they get more powerful and before they can organize even further their global jihad. And the tentacles spread even further in our own country. And they're spreading the tentacles through our own freedoms. They're using our freedoms to spread their tentacles in our own country. Our freedoms are going to choke us to death. Our lawyers and our legal system are being used against us. And the faster we destroy his nuclear ambitions from the air, and the faster we cut the tentacles off in the United States, the less damage there will be. But make no mistake about it, there will be great damage in this country one way or the other. And it's only a matter of time. And so, as I say, do you take your enemy on now while he's building himself up, or do you take your enemy on later when he's already built up? That's the only choice you have. They're not good choices. They're terrible choices. Now, the Democrats want to put their head in the sand and say that we can just talk our way out of it. History has shown us very few things, but one thing history has shown us is that you can never negotiate with a tyrant. We are negotiating with a tyrant who believes in a book and believes that every word of that book is written by God, his Allah. You can't reason with a madman. Hitler had his Mein Kampf. This one has the Quran. Do you understand that? The only thing that capacitates from the air as quickly as possible. And then cut the tentacles off Hezbollah and the United States of America. Cut them off overnight. Break down any door you have to break down. Forget habeas corpus. Throw the ACLU in prison with them, and you'll see how much the ACLU loves them the next day. WOR, Rich, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Okay, this is you're using the same exact rhetoric that they used in the drum-up to the war in Iraq.
Now, let's stop right there. We've tried diplomacy with the Hitler of Iran. They have tried diplomacy for 2 years. What world do you live in, moron?
First of all, there's no evidence that they're building any kind of nuclear weapons. The IAEA even
Look, I don't give a damn if you're an agent of Iran. Get out of my country, you filthy wretch, you.
Sure.
Get out of my country. You're exactly like the Gestapo agents who were planted here in 1937, 38, 39. Hitler had his minions here, too, said that Germany doesn't want war with America while they're planning war with America. You don't fool me for a minute. You're a paid agent of Iran, and there are thousands of you who are trained to call talk radio. And if I had my way, I would track you down. I'd have the FBI break your door in 10 minutes and pull you out by your hair. Get off my show. You want a new Michael? Yeah, you got a new Michael. Who's the old Michael? Yeah, you got the new savage who was the old savage. And I've told you that we're sitting in a vacuum right now. We're sitting here in the eye of the hurricane where nothing is going on. It looks as though nothing is going on. Oh, nothing's going on. Nothing's going on. No, nothing's going on. The Hitler of our time has the Quran. He believes in the monodimensionality of that book, that throwback book from the 7th century that hasn't been revised once. Your Bible has been revised several times. Jewish Bible has been revived several times. Not the Quran, though. They still live in the 7th century. Kill homosexuals. Put women in dark clothing. Cut off anyone's head who doesn't agree with you. What kind of religion is this?
What kind of world are you living in that you let them in here with that throwback document in their hand, which is a book of hate? Don't tell me I need re-education. They need deportation. I don't need re-education. Deportation, not re-education. You can take CAIR and throw them out of my country. Savage.
Anti-American, well, I don't even know how to put it anymore other than the Obama administration, which says it all, wants to drastically cut the number of U.S. nuclear weapons in our stockpile. This is while China is increasing theirs, Russia's advancing theirs. These cuts could potentially encompass up to 80% of our stockpile, did you hear me? Which would reduce our nuclear weapons to the lowest level since the 1950s. Does Obama care anything for national security? Could it get any more frighteningly dismal? Bringing foreign policy insight on this developing story, James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation joins us. James, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on the show. It is always awesomely an honor and a privilege to be with you.
For those of us who don't follow nuclear arms control and what it really means, would you bring us up to speed? What does the overall picture look like?
It really looks like something out of that old movie with Dr. Strangelove. I mean, you can't believe this is for real. The president has embraced this thing called Global Zero, which is the idea that the United States basically gets rid of all of its nuclear weapons. Everybody else will follow. It's really a nutty idea. I mean, the United States has dramatically cut its nuclear weapons since the end of the Cold War. But we have more nuclear powers now than we ever had. So that it's just an idea that on its face just makes no sense.
Is Obama really leaving us defenseless in a time of danger? Aren't 100 weapons enough?
Pretty much. Look, this is a get-out-of-jail-free card. The way it works is the president defines how much he needs, and then the military says, okay, well, this is how many weapons you need to do that. So if the president picks an arbitrary number, which he did, I mean, the military has no choice but to say, okay, here's what you can do with the arbitrary number that you've just picked. Why this is a big problem is you have to target something with a nuclear weapon. So there's two choices. One's called counter force, which means you target the enemy's nuclear weapons so they can't shoot at you, and so you can hold them at risk. The other's called counter value, where they say, look, we'll just blow up your cities. So Obama's going to have so few nuclear weapons that if you think about covering all the legitimate targets of where an enemy could attack us in China and Russia and Iran and North Korea, there's not enough weapons to cover that. So what Obama's going to wind up doing by default is he's basically going to go back to what's called counter value, which means if somebody threatens to attack us, our only option is to kill their entire population. That is immoral and illogical. And if you think about it, when a future president's presented with that choice, they're going to be, what are you, an idiot? I mean, because Iran closed the Straits of Hormuz, you want me to kill the entire Iranian population? I can't do that. So he's actually putting us in a really, really terrible place. Really what he's doing is making our nuclear deterrent no longer a deterrent. And that is actually going to increase the cause of war. We actually did this. If we did an assessment, it's on our website. It's called Nuclear Games. Games, I know, is kind of a funny word, but we actually went through and we war gamed out what happens if you try to follow Obama's strategy. And when we did it, we had nuclear war every time. And the report's on our website at heritage.org.
Just how much of the nuclear arsenal is Obama cutting?
He's probably going to cut 2/3 of what we have left. Which, again, even if it leaves us with 300 to 500, I know that sounds like a lot. But, you know, our enemies aren't stupid. I mean, countries like North Korea and Iran have figured they've got to hide things, they've got to dig them in, they've got to make them hard to get to. It is not hard, if you add up China's got miles and miles of tunnels. It is not hard for between Russia and China and North Korea and Iran to quickly come up with enough places to hide stuff that the United States can't legitimately say it can actually threaten all these targets. And so what you're leaving is yourself vulnerable to an enemy or a combination of enemies. And the question is why are you doing this? This is stuff we have already bought and paid for. It's like, you know, sending the police home and telling them you don't need them anymore. It makes no sense. Look, Is the world dramatically more safer than it was when Obama came into office? And the answer is, of course not. Iran's more dangerous. North Korea's more dangerous. China's a rising power. Russia is as uncompromising as ever. The Arab Spring has made things very untenable. So it's really hard to argue the world is dramatically more safe than it was when Obama came in office, and yet he's going to give us one-third the nuclear weapons we had, and he's going to cut the military by 100,000, and he's going to let $1 trillion in cuts in defense. So we're going to be left with a military that is far smaller and less capable than it was under President Clinton, and nobody can tell me that the world is safer today than it was back in the 1990s.
How will U.S. target options shift if Obama gets his wish to reduce the nuclear arsenal, and can it be reversed when he's thrown out of office?
Well, the top targets are basically going to be cities, because we're not going to have enough to cover to hold the enemy's nuclear infrastructure at risk. So basically, the only thing we can do is say, look, if you attack us, we will kill your entire population. So basically, we are going back to the targeting that we had in the 1950s and 60s, what's called massive retaliation. So if people think back to the movie Dr. Strangelove and how stupid it seemed that the answer was the only way we could deter an enemy was by threatening that everybody can kill everybody, that's the world that Obama's taking us back to. He is not taking us back to global zero. It's like if all the gangs had guns and knives and you had an army, and what you did is you disarm yourself so the gangs had as many weapons as you did, well, then that makes more war more likely. So what the United States is doing by essentially taking our nuclear superiority off the table, rather than leading everybody else to disarm, it's made everybody else's nuclear weapons that much more valuable and given them that much more leverage on threatening us.
Would eliminating all nuclear weapons do the world good or harm? I mean, that's an esoteric question, frankly, because it's never going to happen.
Well, like I said, we went through and war-gamed and analyzed if following Obama's strategy, you have less nuclear weapons. And what we found out is it did. But unfortunately, it did, because every time we tried to follow his strategy, we wound up with a nuclear war. And there were less nuclear weapons because people shot them at each other.
How do you think foreign powers are going to react to this erosion of American strength? To me, weakness. Weakness. Weakness.
Well, we just had a great case study of that when the U.S. carrier left the Gulf and the Iranians immediately stood up and said, well, we control the Straits of Hormuz now. There's going to be more and more of that where people are going to perceive U.S. weakness. And, you know, when I tell people that Obama is turning us into a second-class military power, people say, how is that possible? We still have the largest military in the world or the most capable military in the world, which is becoming arguable. But even if that's true, is we have to cover the world, because we have interests all over the world, because we have the world's largest economy. Nobody else has to do that. So in any one area, we're actually not the world superpower. If you look at nuclear weapons, for example, because the president signed the arms control treaty with the Russians now have many more nuclear weapons than we do. Under that treaty, the Russians had to cut no nuclear weapons. We had to cut our long range, that's the strategic weapons, we had to cut those down to match the Russians. So those are about equal, although the president wants to cut more. But the Russians have a lot more tactical nuclear weapons than we do. So they actually have a lot more nuclear weapons than we do. And matter of fact, in Europe, they have a 20-to-1 advantage to us in nuclear capability. This is unlearning all the lessons of the Cold War. This is, instead of peace through strength, this is inviting aggression through weakness.
Now, some would argue that Obama's plan to eliminate our nukes is good for the budget. But is that even true?
No, actually. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the budget. Look, the defense, even before these new cuts are in place, defense has already taken 50% of the cuts in spending. It's only 20% of the budget. You're never going to solve the budget crisis by just gutting defense. I mean, defense, as a matter of fact, if you add up all the means-tested welfare programs in the government, it adds up to more of the defense budget. In just a few years under President Obama, the deficit will be bigger than the defense budget. And we don't have to do this. Look, we did the budget analysis. We did a budget plan. It's called Saving the American Dream. It was scored just like regular budgets by the Congressional Budget Office standards. And under our plan, we balanced the budget in 10 years. We put a huge cut in the deficit. Every class of Americans is better off than they are now under this plan. We don't raise taxes, and we fully fund defense for decades. So you can. It's called Saving the American Dream. It's a hard fast, studied, you know, evaluated plan. It's on our website, heritage.org. So the people that argue that we have to gut defense and make ourselves less safe in order to balance the budget, they're just wrong. As a matter of fact, all gutting defense does, and we've seen this. We saw it with Clinton, and now we're seeing it with Obama. They gut defense, and they don't do anything else. So it doesn't force them to address the real issues. It's like taking a heroin fix. It may help a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're right back where you started. These guys refuse to rein in spending, and all they can do to rein in spending is to make us less safe. That makes no sense. And in the end, it creates wars, and wars are much more expensive than peace.
How could this affect Obama's approval rating or the presidential election when most stupid Americans could care less about anything except the ice cream cone in their fat mouths?
Well, I think until there's a crisis, it won't. I mean, Americans basically trust their leaders to do the right thing. And nobody follows the state of day. If you ask the average American on the street how many nuclear weapons, they wouldn't be able to tell you. If you ask them what we spend on defense, most of them would estimate we spend 4 to 5 times what we do on defense. They hear this, you know, this silly talk in Washington about, and they don't pay much attention to it. So they'll pay attention when there's a big crisis. But unfortunately, do we really want to wait till there's a crisis before Americans stand up and take notice? I just posted a blog. We have a website, a blog called The Foundry on our website. And I just posted a post called Nightmare Cinema. I just two little short film clips that we had made of what happens when the stuff Obama is doing is failing. And it is terrifying. And you wish that people would look at this stuff, because if they're going to wait until the Korean War breaks out or Pearl Harbor or 9/11 to pay attention, it's going to cost them a heck of a lot more, and the price is not in dollars. It's in crosses and Stars of David lining cemeteries.
Well, do any of the Republican presidential candidates have a reasonable plan for managing the U.S. nuclear stockpile?
We co-sponsored a debate with CNN and the American Enterprise Institute a while back. It was the only presidential debate we had specifically on national security. And I thought the great thing about that debate was the candidates really did kind of, I think, reveal who they were. And I tell folks, you know, go back, find that debate that we did in Washington, D.C., watch it and make up your own mind.
James Carafano, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on the show. Folks want more, they can go to our website, www.heritage.org, and just keep it up.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Zachariah talks about what could be considered nuclear war, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light but heavy clouds and thick. You hear this? And there shall be one day which shall be known as the Lord's, not day and not night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time there shall be light. And it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. It's frightening. I mean, it really makes your hair stand up, because it's pretty ugly what's coming. He says, I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. If this doesn't sound like what's going on right now, it seems to me all the nations of the world are lined up against Jerusalem right now. It seems all the nations are lined up against Jerusalem, except the nation of Christianity here in America. And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity. But the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations. And when he fighteth in the day of battle, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives. Shall I stop this right now? Read it for yourself. It's in Zechariah 14. So he actually, in this Zechariah, predicts that Israel shall be attacked, the city shall be razed, half the city shall be taken into captivity, and at that point, God steps in. And at that point, you'll have to see how this story comes out. It says that, because it goes like this, and it shall come to pass in that day that there shall not be light, but heavy clouds and thick. So the Israelis then go nuclear, and they incinerate Iran, they incinerate Syria, they incinerate their enemies. And it shall come to pass in that day that living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and half of them toward the western sea. in summer and in winter shall it be. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall the Lord be one and his name one. All the land shall be turned. I don't want to read anymore because many of you don't believe in this. And I don't know whether to believe in it. And this shall be the plague where the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. You're listening to this one? If this is not a description of nuclear destruction of the Iranian people and the Syrian people, I'd like to know a better clinical description of than what I'm going to read to you. I'll read it to you. It is a description of the after effects of a nuclear holocaust upon Iran and upon Syria. And this shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the peoples that have warred against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. And their eyes shall consume away in their sockets. And their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one in the hand of his neighbor. And his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. So it's terrible. It's terrible, but that is what the psychopath from Iran wants. The psychopath from Iran is trying to annihilate the Jewish people. He stands up with that dirty smirk on his face every day and says, the death of Israel is near. The Jews shall be driven into the sea. We shall destroy it. This is every day. And those pimps at the UN, those whoremongering pimps at the UN say nothing. Those dirty, useless pimps in the UN, I have nothing but utter guttered contempt for all of them. They're worthless, all of them. They say nothing. Instead, they attack America. They attack Israel. And they wonder why we, the people who know what's going on, want those degenerate bums thrown out of the east side. Don't get me started. Don't get me started because I can get really good started here. The UN, I spit on them. Worthless. But God will take care of them in the end, I can guarantee you. But what I've read to you before I got emotionally wrapped up in this is a perfect clinical description of what happens to people with the effects of a nuclear bomb. Now, it's interesting that I'm talking about this right now because I once interviewed on this show 10 years ago the man who created the neutron bomb, and it was an astounding interview. I have the tapes somewhere. I have to get them for you for next week. But he wrote an autobiography called Shame. His name is Cohen, I remember now. Mr. Cohen developed the neutron bomb. By the way, we have no neutron bombs. George Bush Sr., disassembled all of them in an attempt to make the world safer. Did you know that? I don't know if you know this. It's shocking to it's heartbreaking to tell you this, but hey, what the heck? I'm that kind of guy. We once had neutron bombs. George Bush I disassembled all of our neutron bombs in an attempt to make peace. He went along the liberal road. Now, our enemies now have neutron bombs. We don't, so far as I last checked. But Mr. Cohen writes in his autobiography, Shame, about a lot of symptoms of a nuclear explosion. And you're not going to believe what I tell you, and it's going to take me a little time to get into this. I didn't plan on this right now. I'm going to have to go get the book, which I have a few steps from here in my vast, savage library. I have the biography. I'm looking right at it here, but it's at the back of the office, the studio. He describes why he thinks, psychologically, why he became a scientist and why he developed a bomb that would do this to people. The symptoms that I just described to you, the melting away in essence of a person's flesh, their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet, and their eyes shall consume away in their sockets, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. To me, out of Zechariah, I'm reading to you a prophetic vision of what's coming to the enemies of Israel. It ends with Jerusalem shall dwell safely. The enemy shall be exterminated. But this is after half the Jews are killed and taken into captivity. In other words, you want to talk about a nightmare scenario. You know, who's the winner here? Well, it would be much better if the UN sent out a strike force to take out the psychopath of Iran before he leads the world to a nuclear holocaust. That is what any sane individual would understand needs to be done. These madmen must be stopped. But instead, we have psychopaths in America. We have idiots on the Democrat side who say we are provoking Iran, that they're peace-loving people, that they mean no harm. They are the most dangerous people on the planet. These potheads, these sexual deviants that the media continues to hold up as role models. These know-nothings, these psychopaths.
Savage.